the libertarians and the communists, I think, ultimately share the same view of anthropology. Ultimately, they believe that men are fundamentally individuals born primarily in as much as we have a political life with rights and entitlements. And the commies say we're all individuals, and then they bunch us all up together, and they're sort of a hideous collective.
Yeah,
and the libertarians just don't get to that next stage. But both of them reject the reality of man
as
not merely an individual, but as a social being, as a political animal born into a family, in time and space, into a community, into a nation, with, I think, primarily duties and obligations and traditions. And he has rights and things, too, but that's not the primary fact of his political nature. The libertarians and the communists.
Things are going to start happening to me now.
You've done all the reading. You're a scholar, you're a professor. You've done all the reading. You've done the intellectual heavy lifting.
Or less, eat shit and die.
You wouldn't know a fact if it begged you all night long.
Wanna like, give the wrong impression, because I am very high.
F***ing ran up behind him with a hatchet. Smash, smash, smash. Yeah.
Care. I'm a libertarian. What I'm getting is,
did you vote for Joe Jorgensen or Trump?
Who?
Joe Jorgensen. That was the perfect answer. Thank you. That was...
And we're live, everybody. Libertarian Podcast Review. This is Tyler Yonke. We're playing Brightside by Tim Pool. Not a fan, but I cut this for the Tower Gang the other night, and we didn't. I don't think we used it. So, welcome everybody, Tyler Yonke. Look, that was a little bit of a taste. And JC says, "Oh my God, hi Andy." I don't know that Andy's showing up tonight. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Here's what the deal is: we're going. Malay's speech is 20 some minutes. We're going to play it. There's a but. I just thought that you got to set some things up here. And one of my all-time new antagonists is Eddie says, "I hope you're doing well, Tyler." I am. I'm doing actually quite well. Thank you. I hope everyone else out there is doing well. I've been feeling good lately. Been back on the bike, down about 10 pounds. Going to the gym, feeling good. Work and everything is going. You know, a Twitter friend, I was able to guide him along this week with some family law stuff. Makes me feel really good to help people out like that. And some things went well. So not going to say who it is, but kudos to his. Did a lot of work. I just was trying to help push him in the right direction. It's what I do all the time. So. Thoughts and prayers out there to people like that that are, I hope Andy is doing well. I do too. And it wasn't Andy, but, anyway, okay. So Malay, look, anarcho-capitalist. And if you watch Tower Gang at all, you did get to see Owen Benjamin going a little unhinged at Clint this last week. I enjoyed it, immensely. Although I don't think that's something, a show we want to do every week like that. But totally, it's in a weird situation. If you go and watch it, it's usually, you know, more in the funny stuff, and it got way out of hand with politics and kind of the libertarian stuff. And Owen Benjamin, you know, I think he's stuck in his ways. He was never over there with Dave Smith anyway, just so people know that. Anyway, I started the show out here playing a clip of Michael Knowles of the Daily Wire. He goes after libertarians hard, and his point, and Aaron McIntyre does this too. And look, like libertarians or not, I don't really give a shit. There's all different types of tones and different types of them. So you almost have to be very specific. I just think it's hilarious when me being part of this too, the conservative, when the conservatives take these people on. And you know, Michael Knowles just said basically here that, you know, libertarians have a lot in common with the communists. And I'm like, well, so everyone has something in common with, I mean, you know, he's very authoritarian. I wouldn't want to live in his society. Anyway, I've done a whole thing where I broke down the no, Dickie, you're not coming in. I broke down the whole thing with Knowles on with Tim Pool, understanding where his understanding is of libertarianism, blah, 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 blah. I only bring this up because it has to do with now Javier Milei goes to the WEF, and we'll play some clips of people's take on that, and we'll play his speech too. And now, and people like Knowles gloms onto this, but so if And by the way, maybe we should get right to it. We should get right to some of the quotes. Let's start off. I'm going to start off here with Dave Smith and McIntyre, where they talked about some of this stuff back on March 31 of 2023. This was episode 979, State of Everything with Arn McIntyre. Let's go.
One of the videos of yours that I watched recently, which I did like the video, but I disagreed with some of what you were saying, but it was something like.
Uh-oh, what happened? Am I being, Dickie said he's going to leave. He just got my first no. I don't have a lot of time. I've got to do this show and put it out. And when I do clips and stuff like this, it just doesn't work. Okay, Dickie, no offense. What's going on with this one here?
One of the videos of yours that I watched recently, which I did like the video, but I disagreed with some of what you were saying. But it was something like they won't stop targeting your kids. If you remember the one that I'm talking about,
yeah.
I'll put your YouTube link in the description of the episode so people can go check all of your stuff out. But so it seemed to me like one of your views of why the conservatives keep losing to the left was almost like that they had accepted libertarianism too much. But it's kind of like the ones who just want to be left alone are always going to lose to the ones who want to win, and that the conservative movement had just kind of accepted this idea that we can't use government against our enemies. Am I getting that wrong, or what exactly?
No, that's essentially right. Like that's one of many reasons. And of course, as we've already discussed, we'll have to be careful about how we define libertarianism, because whenever someone, for instance, jumps into the comments and says, you and Dave Smith have to debate because you just disagree so much, what they're saying is like, because I'm making fun of Beltway libertarians, I'm just saying the same thing. I'm going to make a short plea to you and all the Mises guys. Just change the name to something else. Like like you said, if Hillary Clinton is a libertarian and Bill Maher is a libertarian and Greg Gutfeld is a libertarian and Mises is a libertarian, the word just doesn't mean anything. I don't call myself a conservative.
Well, hold on, but Greg Gutfeld's all right. But those other ones, yeah.
But I'm not saying he's not. What I'm saying is, if all of these people wear the same moniker, then something is wrong with the moniker, right? And so I understand the attachment to it. I get it. It's our word, right? We own it, right? I understand why you would want to hold on to it. But like I said, even though I was a conservative for most of my life, and I don't call myself a conservative because I don't think that I hold to the values of the 1990s GOP or the political orthodoxy of the 1990s GOP. And the word is so useless at this point, I think we need a new one. That was what my latest piece was about.
Yeah, get to it.
Over at The Blaze was conservatism's dead and we need a new thing. We got to build a new thing. That doesn't mean I'm refuting all the things about conservatism. There's still principles of it that I hold dear. But the term has become useless in the popular culture, and I think we need something else. I think the same is true of libertarians. It's not that there isn't truth in parts of libertarianism. It's not that specifically the Mises Caucus doesn't have something valuable to say. But the term itself is just, it's owned by 400-pound fat guys dancing in their underwear and talking about the age of consent. It just is. That's what people think of when they think about libertarianism.
I don't know if that's exactly true. See, okay, so in general, like...
Okay, by the way, let's bring Dickie in here. I just don't want you fucking up the show. What are you doing?
I'm driving a forklift.
So you're at work right now?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just could be part of this.
I'm here to bring some blue collar experience to your show since Andy's not here. So the people have to relate to you somehow. Not all everybody. Right. You know,
I appreciate that, but I've got a serious show going on here, so. Drinking and driving.
Okay. I wasn't aware.
I don't know if that's appropriate. Okay, I'm going to keep playing this here. Let's see. Go back to it there. There we go.
Look, there is some truth to the fact that, like, okay, sometimes a term becomes so useless that you just have to abandon it. But also sometimes the linguistic battle is important. And you can't. And this is, by the way, I think part of how.
Okay, I'm going to skip here because I thought I had the right spot.
A lot more people think Ron Paul than think that fat dancing naked guy who was an embarrassment. And I think that it's kind of like almost what's going on in the Republican Party, where the neocons have been completely beat down and the kind of like populist, more Trump supporters are winning. And it even right now, if you look at the polls, it's like it's DeSantis and Trump and no Nikki Haley's at like 1%. Like no one's supporting this kind of like that vision, even though if you look at the think tank power or something like that, the neocons are wrecking, you know, the populists. Like, but amongst the base, there's just way more support for this kind of new Trumpian direction. I think that's also true within the libertarian movement. Like, yes, there is Cato and Reason. And even within Cato and Reason, there's some splits about this. But if you look at what just happened with the Libertarian Party, if you also just look at like all of the kind of.
Okay, I think I fucked up. by bringing this one, because there was a specific spot I had where they were talking about, basically he was doing the whole thing where he's blaming the Libertarian Party for the downfalls of the, okay, we did that one, the downfalls of the GOP, and that's just stupid. Okay, so I'm going to get to another one here before I play Malay. How you doing over there? How's work going?
It's all right, man. I'm trying to think of Schrodinger's Libertarian Party. So they're like simultaneously powerful enough to fuck up the GOP because they're a bunch of pussies, but they're also like inept enough to have 400 pound fat guys in their underwear. Is that what I'm getting here?
Yeah, it's a weird concept. It's like, oh, you guys are nothing. And that's kind of the point of playing that too, which is, look, you've got all these, you're nobodies, da-da-da, and then they go on to rant about how they're the problem. And we're going to play another one here. I know everyone's heard this one, but I just want to play some of these before we show them, then getting all giddy about Malay.
Society to get richer because a rising tide lifts all boats, and everybody watches Raytheon and Boeing and BlackRock and Amazon get richer and richer and richer, and their boats aren't rising. And it really led a lot of people who have been capitalists their whole lives to at least start questioning not capitalism as a theory, but capitalism how it manifests in American society. What is your view about sort of where the populist right is, the Trump movement is, when it comes to these core questions of economic theory and economic populism?
I think a lot of people have awakened to the now demonstrable fact that libertarian economics was a scam perpetrated by the beneficiaries of the economic system that they were defending. So they created this whole intellectual framework to justify the private equity culture that's hollowed out the country. That's my personal view, and I've seen it up close my whole life, so I think it's a fair assessment.
I'm not going to go into more because Dave and a bunch of these other people have already talked about that. So we're just going to let that. I'm just posting these some quick things here to get a sense of where everyone is blaming the libertarians, but then I'm all excited about Malay, which I think is justified, and not everybody. Here was Michael Knowles on Tim Kaine.
Right. And by the way, not to be too harsh, you know, on the libertarian effect on the conservative movement, but a lot of the reason why the libs have become so good, specifically over the last 60 years, at wielding the government in a way that it was not very good actually at before. You saw, you know, you saw the beginnings of it with Woodrow Wilson and FDR, but you still had a lot of conservative political power within the government. A lot of the reason why we're not good at it anymore is because the libertarians convinced the conservatives that wielding political power per se is wrong and immoral. And by doing that, we conceded the entire political field and had the libs run all of the institutions.
The conservatives. Okay, so once again, that's just a really stupid comment. You're working late. I'm on the West Coast, and I've been done for a while. Of course, I quit.
It's only 6:13. You know, some of us we have to work for another boss. We don't get to work for 2 hours. We don't have the high German IQ that you do.
good point.
I have about 85 black IQ, aka Irish. So I'm here for another hour. So I also just like being here, fucking around on forklifts and stuff.
Yeah, so, no use being home with your wife and your kid. Okay, I'm gonna just play a little bit of this.
Argentina, Javier Milei, who no one really knows anything about, but I think a lot of people, especially on the right, realize represents a major change in Argentina and a change that is positive and a lurching to the right. Here is just one clip from Mr. Milei. I'll translate, because you can't give SHIT leftards an inch. Can you define SHIT leftist? The interviewer asks. All collectivists, all kinds of collectivists. But why do you call them SHIT? Because they are SHIT. If you think differently from them, they will kill you. This is the point. You can't give SHIT leftists an inch. If you give them an inch, they will use it to destroy you. You can't negotiate with leftards. Oh my goodness. You don't negotiate with trash because they will end you. That's this guy. When he won, he just starts like jumping around the stage. He's got crazy looking hair. He is very much a Trumpian figure in the looks, in bombastic language, in the political program. He has a more right-wing populist kind of agenda that not issue for issue, but almost issue for issue, maps onto Trump.
Okay. No, it doesn't map onto Trump, but this is the dumb. And by the way, if you have a show, a big show, and you have to spell shit, S-H-I-T, every time you do, you're a child. You're a fucking child. F-U-C-K-I-N-G. Child. Sorry, what was that?
Or a Catholic.
Okay. Or a Catholic. Yeah, exactly. So that's that approach. Now, look, he just said how they were the downfall of the GOP. You you had the libertarians are the problem. We heard that from, but then he's excited and touting this. If you don't want a South American country to fall worse, I don't know how it could, then why are you, you know, espousing this libertarian stuff that you just said is the problem? Well, because then you said it was very right wing and everything. So he's confused. All Catholics are cursed. Okay. I don't have a problem with that. Knowles has his head squarely up his own ass. I believe so. Okay. Knowles is a Catholic, by the way. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
This side note, the way that Malay just refuses to elaborate and calls his opposition shit and doesn't even want to talk to them is amazing. I wish more Republicans did that. I don't know if you saw the Sean Strickland UFC interviews. I'm sure you did. I'll
look at
Twitter. But I mean, literally what he does, he's like, oh, you're Canadian. Nah, I don't give a shit. And you're gay. Okay. You're an ally. Even worse. Like, he just refuses to elaborate and shits on them the whole time. And they can't do anything but cry because what are they going to do? Say he's homophobic. He's going to be like, I don't give a shit. Like,
yeah. So a few things. One, it appears you're left-handed. Is that correct?
I am left-handed. Correct.
Okay. We'll just, by the way, I was gonna take you. I was gonna remove you from the screen, and you did it yourself. So, well done.
I didn't do anything. I think it might have been my connection or something.
Yeah, everybody just knew. Okay, so I'm gonna play the speech here. This is AI generated, where it's translated and in his own voice. It's fantastic. This is 23 minutes. So I'm gonna play it. You with me? You're gonna be okay. I mean, you could drop out if you want, but.
I'm here, man. Why do I want to drop out?
Okay. Let me know if you want to make any comments. I'm going to do a 1.25 speed, so we move a little quicker. But here's the hair man. So everybody, enjoy. We're going to play this speech. The WEF, World Economic Forum, which is an evil organization. There was problems with Millet going there because he had spoken there. You know, he's an economist, and he had spoken there years ago. And people were like, he's on the WEF website, and people made a big deal. But if you looked into it, it was him trashing them at their place. Now he's got another chance to do it. So is this a valid thing? Is he being used somehow? Doesn't matter. I love what he's doing here, even if they, whatever. So let's go. Let's start off. Okay, glasses.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. Today I am present to inform you that the Western world is facing a significant threat. It is in danger because those who are supposed to defend the values of the Western world are co-opted by a worldview that inevitably leads to socialism and consequently to poverty and economic deprivation. Unfortunately, in recent decades, motivated by some well-intentioned desires to help others and others by the desire to belong to a privileged caste, the main leaders of the Western world have abandoned the model of freedom for different versions of what we call collectivism. We are here to tell you that collectivist experiments are never the solution to the problems that afflict the citizens of the world, but rather they are their cause. Trust me, there is no one better than us Argentines to provide testimony on these two issues.
Correct.
When we embraced freedom in 1860, in 35 years we became the world's first dominant power. 35 years we became the first world power. While when we embraced collectivism, over the past 100 years, we saw how our citizens began to systematically impoverish themselves until they fell to the 140th position in the world, 40 in the world. But before we can have this discussion, it would be important for us to first look at the data that supports why free market capitalism is not only a possible system to end world poverty, but also the only morally desirable system to achieve it. If we consider the history of economic progress, we can see how from year zero until around 1800, the world's per capita GDP remained practically constant throughout the reference period. If one looks at a chart of the evolution of economic growth throughout human history, one would be seeing a chart with the shape of a hockey stick, an exponential function that remained constant for 90% of the time and exponentially shoots up from the 19th century. The sole exception to this stagnant history was at the end of the 15th century with America's discovery. Except for this, from year zero to 1800, global per capita GDP remained stagnant without any significant changes. Now, not only did capitalism generate an explosion of wealth from the moment it was adopted as an economic system, but if one analyzes the data, what is observed is that growth has been accelerating throughout the entire period. During the entire period between year zero and 1800, the per capita GDP growth rate remains stable at around 0.02% annually. That is, practically without growth. From 19th century, with industrial revolution, growth rate reaches 0.66%. Given the current rate, it would require a time span of approximately 107 years to achieve a twofold increase in per capita GDP. In 1900, 1950, growth rate rises to 1.66% annually. 150, growth rate rises to 1.36% annually. We no longer need 107 years to double per capita GDP, but 66. If we take the period between 1950 and the year 2000, we can see that the growth rate was 2.1% annually, which would mean that in just 33 years, we could double the world's per capita GDP. This trend, far from stopping, remains alive even now. If we consider the period from 2000 to 2023, the growth rate increased again at 3% per year, meaning we could double our per capita GDP globally in only 23 years. Now, when studying per capita GDP from 1800 to today, what is observed is that after the Industrial Revolution, global per capita GDP multiplied by more than 15 times, generating an explosion of wealth that lifted 90% of the world's population out of poverty. We must never forget that by the year 1800, about 95% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty, while that number dropped to 5% by the year 2020, prior to the pandemic. The conclusion is obvious. Far from being the cause of our problems, free market capitalism as an economic system is the only tool we have to end hunger, poverty, and destitution throughout the planet. The empirical evidence is unquestionable. Therefore, as there is no doubt that free market capitalism is superior in productive terms, the left's doxa has attacked capitalism for its moral issues, for being, according to them, as its detractors say, unjust. They claim capitalism is bad because it's individualistic and collectivism is good because it's altruistic towards others. And thus they strive for social justice. But this concept that has become trendy in the developed world recently, in my country, it has been a constant in political discourse for over 80 years. The issue is that social justice is unfair and doesn't contribute to general well-being. On the contrary, it's an inherently unfair idea because it's violent. It's unfair because the state is financed through taxes and taxes are collected coercively. Or can any of us confidently say that they pay taxes of their own free will? This implies that the state is funded through coercion and that the higher the tax burden, the greater the coercion, leading to a reduction in freedom. Those who promote social justice start from the idea that the economy as a whole is a cake that can be distributed in a different way. But that cake is not given. It is wealth that is generated in what, for example, Israel Kirzner calls a market discovery process. If the good or service that a company offers is not desired, that company goes bankrupt unless it adapts to what the market is demanding. Create a high-quality product at a good price or attractive, succeed and produce more, so the market is a process of discovery where the capitalist finds the right direction on the go. But if the state punishes the capitalist for success and blocks him in this process, it destroys his incentives, and the consequences are that he will produce less and the cake will be smaller, generating harm to society.
Okay.
Collectivism, by inhibiting discovery and hindering appropriation, ties the entrepreneur's hands, preventing him from producing better goods and offering better services at a better price. How can it be then that from academia, international orgs, politics, and econ theory, an econ system is demonized that not only has lifted 90% of the world's pop out of extreme poverty and does so increasingly faster, but is also fair and morally superior? Thanks to capitalism, the world is currently in its best moment. There has never been a moment in history with greater prosperity than the one we live in today. Today's world is freer, richer, more peaceful, and more prosperous.
Sorry, what was that?
So who was the Indian guy that recited the speech for him?
That did what? He needed a teleprompter.
Indian guy that recited the speech for him.
I don't know what you're talking about. He needed a teleprompter so he can be a little bit more dynamic like he typically is. JC says, I think he saves that for his speeches in front of general population. This is a convention filled with a think tank policy wonks. True, but, it's really out there to the masses. So anyway,
for us than ever before. This is true for everyone, but particularly for those countries that are free, where they respect economic freedom and individual property rights. Because free countries are 12 times richer than repressed ones. Saying goes that in countries with freedom, people live better than 90% of population in repressed countries. It has 25 times fewer poor people in the standard format and 50 times fewer in the extreme format. And if that weren't enough, citizens of free countries live 25% longer than citizens of repressed countries. Hmm. Now, in order to understand what we come to defend, it is important to define what we mean when we talk about libertarianism. To define it, I take up the words of the greatest proponent of the ideas of freedom in Argentina, Professor Alberto Venegas Lynch,
who
says that libertarianism is the unrestricted respect for the life project of others, based on the principle of non-aggression, and in defense...
Say it again.
Was that an N-word I just heard?
...defense of the right to life, like liberty, and property, whose fundamental institutions are private property, free markets without state intervention, free competition, division of labor, and social cooperation, where one can only be successful by serving others with goods of better quality at a better price. In other words, the capitalist, the successful entrepreneur, is a social benefactor who contributes to the well-being of society as a whole. In short, a successful entrepreneur is a hero. This is the model that we are proposing for the future of Argentina, a model based on the fundamental principles of libertarianism, the defense of life, freedom, and property. Now, if free market capitalism and economic freedom have been remarkable instruments to eradicate poverty globally, and we are presently experiencing the most favorable period in human history, it is worth inquiring why I assert that the West is in jeopardy. I argue that the West is endangered as in countries defending free market, private property, and other institutions of libertarianism, sectors of the political and economic establishment, due to errors in their theoretical framework and ambition for power, undermine libertarianism, opening doors to socialism, and potentially condemning us to poverty, misery, and stagnation. Because it should never be observed that socialism is always and everywhere impoverishing, failed in all countries where attempted. It was a failure economically, it was a failure socially, it was a failure culturally, and it also killed more than 100 million human beings. The main problem of the West today is that we not only have to confront those who, even after the fall of the wall and overwhelming evidence, continue to advocate for impoverishing socialism, but also our own leaders, thinkers, and academics who, sheltered in a misguided framework, undermine the foundations of the system that has given us the greatest wealth and prosperity in our history. The theoretical framework I am referring to is neoclassical economic theory, which designs an instrument unintentionally functional to the intrusion of the state, socialism, and the degradation of society. The issue with neoclassicals is that since the model they fell in love with doesn't match reality, they attribute the error to the supposed market failure instead of revising the premises of their model. On the text about a supposed market failure, regulations are introduced that only generate distortions in the price system that hinder economic calculation and consequently savings, investment, and growth. This problem essentially lies in the fact that not even supposedly libertarian economists understand what the market is, since if it were understood, it would quickly be seen that it is impossible for there to be such a thing as a market failure. The market is not just a graphical description of a supply curve and a demand curve on a graph. The market is a mechanism of social cooperation where property rights are voluntarily exchanged. Thus, considering this definition, discussing market failure is a contradiction in terms.
Okay, we're going to do a little update here because Top Lobster just sent this to me. This shows on Twitter, -1, who died? Who died and gave us, was watching and then gave us a -1 on Twitter? That's crazy. Come on, people. Pump up the numbers here.
There is no market failure. If transactions are voluntary, the only situation in which there can be a market failure is if there is coercion present. And the only one with the ability to coerce in a generalized manner is the state that possesses the monopoly of violence. Consequently, if someone considers that there is a market failure, I would recommend that they check if there is state intervention in the middle. If no state intervention found, suggest reanalyzing as it is definitely wrong. Market failures do not exist. An example of the alleged market failures described by neoclassicals are concentrated structures in the economy. However, without functions that demonstrate increasing returns to scale, whose counterpart are the concentrated structures of the economy, we would be unable to explain the phenomenon of economic growth from 1800 to the present day. Look how interesting. Commencing from the year 1800 and extending onwards, with the population experiencing a multiplication of more than 8 or 9 times, the per capita income underwent a growth of more than 15 times in magnitude. To clarify, there are more returns. This caused poverty to drop from 95% to 5%. However, the presence of increasing yields implies the existence of concentrated structures, which would be referred to as, for example, a monopoly in the market economy. Hmm. How can it be that something that has generated so much well-being, according to neoclassical theory, that is considered a market failure? Neoclassical economists think outside the box. When the model fails, don't get angry with reality. Get angry with the model and change it. The dilemma for the neoclassical model is that they aim to enhance market functioning by targeting perceived failures. By doing so, they not only open doors to socialism, but also undermine economic growth. For instance, implementing regulations on monopolies, dismantling their profits, and obliterating increasing returns would inevitably annihilate economic growth. In other words, each time you want to correct a presumed market failure, inevitably, due to not knowing the market or because you have become attached to a failed model, you are opening doors to socialism and condemning people to poverty. However, in the face of the theoretical demonstration that state intervention is harmful, the empirical evidence that it failed because it could not be otherwise, the solution that collectivists will propose is not greater freedom, but greater regulation, generating a downward spiral of regulations until we all become poorer and the lives of all of us depend on a bureaucrat sitting in a luxury office. Given the resounding failure of collectivist models and the undeniable advances of the free world, socialists were forced to change their agenda. They left behind the class struggle based on the economic system to replace it with other supposed social conflicts equally harmful to community life and economic growth. The first of these new battles was the ridiculous and unnatural fight between man and woman.
Yikes.
Libertarianism already establishes equality between sexes. The cornerstone of our creed states that all men are created equal, that we all have the same unalienable rights granted by the Creator, among which are life, liberty, and property. This radical feminism agenda has led to increased state intervention, hindering the economic process. It provides jobs to bureaucrats who haven't contributed anything to society, whether through women's ministries or international organizations promoting this agenda. Another conflict that socialists pose is that of humans against nature. They argue that humans cause harm to the planet and that it must be protected at all costs, even advocating for population control mechanisms or supporting the controversial agenda of abortion rights. Unfortunately, these harmful ideas have strongly permeated our society. Neo-Marxists have managed to co-opt the common sense of the Western world. They achieved this through the appropriation of the media, culture, universities, and yes, even international organizations. The final case is very serious, as it involves institutions with huge influence on the political and economic decisions of the countries in these multilateral organizations. Fortunately, more of us dare to raise our voices, as we see that if we don't confront these ideas head-on, the only possible destiny is more state, more regulation, more socialism, more poverty, less freedom, and consequently, a worse quality of life. Unfortunately, the West has already started down this path. To many, it may sound ridiculous to suggest that the West has embraced socialism, but this view is only ridiculous if one limits themselves to the traditional economic definition of socialism, which states that it is an economic system where the state owns the means of production. In my opinion, this definition needs to be updated to reflect the current circumstances from my perspective. Today, states don't need to control means of production to control every aspect of individuals' lives. With tools such as monetary issuance, debt, subsidies, interest rate control, price controls, and regulations to correct alleged market failures, they can control the destinies of millions of human beings.
That's a good point.
This is how we have reached the point where...
What's that?
That's a good point that nobody really talks about. They don't have to seize every means of production to control every aspect of your life. Therefore, they can... You know, you can have somebody like Joe Biden who can make statements like he did a couple of years ago when he like denounced capitalism and socialism. And he's like, oh, they're so bad. And, you know, you can do that when you run a pseudo, when he denounced communism, rather. When you run a pseudo communist state or totalitarian state through, you know, banking or other things like that, especially now that we have the internet, you know, because like you said, you can control every aspect of someone's lives without even having to seize every means of production, even though they pretty much do that already with, you know, half the corporations, all of them.
True.
With different names or forms, good parts of the politically accepted offers in most Western countries are generally collectivist variants. whether they openly declare themselves as communists, fascists, Nazis, socialists, social democrats, national socialists, Christian democrats, Keynesians, neo-Keynesians, progressives, populists, nationalists, or globalists. In the end, there are no substantive differences. Everyone argues that the state should control all aspects of individuals' lives. All define a model contrary to the one that led humanity to the most spectacular progress in its history. We are here today to extend an invitation to the other Western countries to resume the path towards prosperity. Economic freedom, limited government, and unrestricted respect for private property are vital for economic growth. The impoverishment that collectivism produces is not a fantasy, nor is it fatalism. It is a reality that Argentinians have known very well for at least 100 years. Because we have already experienced it, we have already gone through this. Because as I said before, since we decided to abandon the model of freedom that had made us rich, we are trapped in a downward spiral where we are getting poorer every day. This is, we have already experienced it ourselves, and we are here to warn you about what can happen if Western countries who became rich with the model of freedom continue on this path of servitude. The Argentine case is the empirical proof that regardless of wealth, natural resources, population capability, education level, or the amount of gold bars in the central bank's coffers, these factors do not guarantee success. If measures are adopted that hinder the free functioning of markets, free competition, free price systems, if trade is hindered, if private property is attacked, the only possible destination is poverty. Mm. To summarize, I want to convey a message to all entrepreneurs present and those who are not, but are following us from around the globe, whether they're here or not, physically. Don't be intimidated by the political caste or the parasites who live off the state. Don't yield to a political class that only wants to prolong its power and preserve its privileges. You are social benefactors. You are heroes. You are the creators of the most extraordinary era of prosperity we have ever experienced. Don't let anyone say ambition is immoral. If you earn money, it's because you provide a superior product, better price, contributing to well-being. Do not yield to the advance of the state. The state is not the solution. The state is the problem itself. You are the true protagonists of this story. And know that from today, you have Argentina as an unconditional ally. Thank you very much, and long live freedom, damn it.
Long live freedom, damn it. I love the finish.
Viva libertad, carajo! That's probably what he said.
So, look, he's not as fiery as he could be, right? Which we've come to know him as. But I thought it was impressive to go there and to say these outright capitalist screeds against these people that are the super rich people, the WEF, that hate everybody. And so that, yeah. To me, it's an interesting. Now, there's people that say this is all a psyop. He's going there, you know, he's a shill of some sort. And I think maybe I'll play some of those. Let's see here if I could find one of the shows.
Said that?
No. actually, let's take a look here. So I'm going to play, this is, man, I've got way too many tabs going on here. Okay. So I'm going to start deleting some so they can, get back to where I need. There are people that say some things like that, and I will play a few clips of that. Let's see if I can find Pat Gray. So this is a good clip here, which I thought was interesting. This is Pat Gray, of The Blaze, and he said some pretty good things. He plays some clips here, which we've already played, so we don't need to do that. And then I thought we'd play his comment.
Motivated by the wish to belong to a privileged caste, the main leaders of the Western world have abandoned the model of freedom for different versions of what we call collectivism. We're here to tell you that collectivist experiments are never the solution to the problems that afflict the citizens of the world. Rather, they are the root cause. Do believe me, no one better place than us, Argentines, to testify to these 2 points.
Right? You know, that takes some serious guts sure to does. Get up there in front of all of these psychos who are trying desperately to bring down the West so that we can be at the same level as everybody else. And they continue to live off the fat of the land as they always have.
I wonder if the shaman tried to spit on
Javier. If I may
ask
real quick.
I don't think he would have allowed it.
No.
That's got too much.
What's up?
So how conservative are the Blaze? You know, how Michael Knowles was, and Tucker, they were kind of shitting on, you know, libertarian economics and libertarian policies and whatnot. What do the Blaze think of that? Because I'm sure they'll probably fall into the camp of blaming libertarians when applicable, but then also praising Malay.
Yeah. So it depends where you're at. I mean, there's people. So the Blaze is not with, you know, Michael Knowles and them. That's Daily Wire. They sell chocolate.
Right.
And by the way, I want to emphasize, and I was thinking about this too. And actually, let me answer your question and I'll get there. So Pat Gray is conservative, but there, you know, Glenn Beck has professed himself to be libertarian. Matter of fact, during the 2016 election, he had on Johnson, he had on Austin Peterson, and Austin Peterson was the one that I started seeing like, oh, and by the way, it got me into the move, like I could accept this. Part of it was the abortion stance that Austin Peterson had of kind of like defending it through the NAP. And I was like, oh, interesting. You can take this position from a libertarian point of view, because that was always a problem of mine. And so there you go. So Glenn Beck has professed himself to be that, but, you know, he has problems back and forth. Michael Malice has been on his show. Dave Smith has been there. You know, Eric July's on the Blaze. So it depends. Now, I'll show you here. I think Keith Mullinak, his producer, who's sitting here with the beanie on, he's more in line with the Libertarian Party. You know, he had Jose on. I don't know if you knew that. No Way Jose to talk about OKC.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the show that Jose was actually on. It's a pretty big show. Pat Gray is more conservative, but I think he's, you know, and he doesn't even take the Israel thing as hardcore as many do. So it's a little bit better than the Daily Wire, I would say. Anyway, let's keep going.
Much common sense. And he shared more of it.
Okay.
As a result of not knowing what the market is, or as a result of having fallen in love with a failed model, you're opening up the doors to socialism and condemning people to poverty.
Yep.
However, faced with the theoretical demonstration that state intervention is harmful and empirical evidence that it has failed, couldn't have been otherwise, the solution to be proposed by collectivists is not greater freedom, but rather...
Okay, we've already played that, but I wanted to get... There's a spot here he says something right near the end that I thought was really good.
Pause it for a second. He's actually quoting the Declaration of Independence.
Isn't it beautiful?
That's incredible.
I have looked at the homes for sale in Argentina, by the way.
He's quoting Thomas Jefferson, something our own leaders don't
know,
do
bro.
And refuse to do.
I know.
Oh, that's incredible.
And no, I can't afford a house in Argentina. But I did look.
You did look?
No, absolutely. I looked.
Is it really expensive?
Right on the beach. No, it's not expensive. I just can't afford it.
Oh, okay.
abortion agenda. Unfortunately, these harmful ideas have taken a strong hold in our society.
He's so good.
Yeah. So that's something that I don't know that everyone caught in the speech there. He actually pushes back against the abortion agenda. So you talk about Michael Knowles saying there is, look, what is the conservatives? What have they done? You've got the abortion agenda that this guy is going to the WEF. And by the way, I don't know if you've listened to me talk about this before, but I've said this over and over, which is we always take people that we kind of have, RFK or some of these others that they're not with us, but they have one aspect that we like, and then they just use the shit out of us. And I'm like, why don't we use them? I think this is the prime way of having it, which is Malay gets elected. Now he goes to the WEF and he uses them. He uses that platform to go and say a speech and put all of his issues out there. Has Michael Knowles done that? No.
Right to the belly of the beast with that yesterday.
Oh, how much do they hate this guy?
There you go. They hate him a lot. A lot of people hate him for some reason. I don't understand all the reasons why. Okay, so I thought we had also play this. This is a fiery clip. This is a reaction here by our one and only Clint, Liberty Lockdown, after he played some of the speech.
Is your staunch, unconditional ally. Thank you very much, and long live freedom. Damn it.
Put it in my veins! God bless Javier Milei, man. Going into the lion's den. And telling them the state is the problem. These people are in fucking Davos every year talking about how the state is the answer to everything. And he walks in there and he says, the state is the problem. Do you know how important this is? Do you know how vitally necessary this is? Just assume for a second that Javier Milei and Vivek Ramaswamy and Donald Trump, everybody's controlled up. Okay.
Bueno, bueno.
What about the fire that they're igniting with this rhetoric?
I'm sorry.
What about the people that are listening and internalizing this and going and picking up Rothbard or Mises and starting to deep dive these rabbit holes and figuring out that the central bank is actually what's destroying their way of life? What? How do you put that flame out once it's ignited? It ain't easy. What if you do it on scale? What if you have a billion people all over the world that read it, that internalize it, that become as passionate and as psychotically optimistic as I am? How do you stop them then? You don't. You get out of their fucking way. And you hope. You hope that they're kind enough to forgive you. This is why I'm pumped. Okay? Maybe Milei fails in Argentina. Maybe Vivek gets no opportunities in the Trump administration. Maybe Vivek is proven to be a fraud ultimately. None of it is actually relevant to what I'm talking about. I'm talking about igniting a flame that cannot be extinguished. That's what they're doing. And they're doing it to the faces of the people that are responsible for the downfall of civilization. As they use flowery rhetoric, as they try to explain how they are superior to all of us, how the technocrats ought to have control, how they have a moral clarity as to their own superiority, that they have complete certitude that if given infinite power over every man, woman, and child's life all over the world, that if only that would happen, if only we would stop thinking for ourselves and expecting to be able to do things of our own volition, that then all of our problems would be alleviated. They're wrong. They're evilly, evilly wrong. And we have people now that can go into these events and say so with passion, with facts, with statistics, with the history to prove it out. That's fucking incredible. I am so inspired. If you're not, check your pulse. What the fuck? I mean, what the fuck? This is amazing. This is amazing. What an unbelievable time to be alive. We have an anarcho-capitalist that's the president of a goddamn nation with 50 fucking million people in it. What are we talking about? There's no hope? You have no hope. A totally unthinkable thing just happened, and you are hopeless. Well, then give up already. Pack it in. But you know what? For those that haven't given up, stop dragging us down. Allow the people that are passionate to get the fuck after it. If for no other reason than your own potential well-being. You don't know what I might go out and accomplish. You don't know what Vivek might go out and do. Or Milei. Or even Trump in his second term. Who knows? Maybe the dude has actually learned something. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's likely. Yeah. Odds are probably against it, but maybe. Have a little fucking hope. There's miraculous things happening all around us, from Bitcoin to decentralized communication to encryption to you know, people finally embracing libertarianism and sound money, to people being sick of the endless wars, to people actually realizing that $34 trillion of debt is not sustainable, to actually thinking about these things on a high level, not superficial, to be able to say so with passion and studiousness, to actually understand what the fuck you're talking about. There are more of us right now on Earth than ever. I am not hopeless. I will not give up.
Him after a nap.
I think he just, well, look, it's sunshiny outside, so it's during the day. He doesn't wake up till 1-2 or so. It's winter, so he doesn't have a lot of time before the sun goes down. I'm figuring this was, you know, I don't know if he needed a nap, but he's fired up, big guy.
He's either like post, you know, siesta, to where he got a couple, you know, maybe he took like a tea time nap, or he's going into grumpy Joe Biden kind of mode, you know, when the president doesn't have his nap and his ice cream and he starts,
right.
Come on, man, just get back. Yeah,
he's solid. As JC said, this is why he needs so much sleep.
I think so. I mean, I don't fault him for it, but he's, I don't know. I guess, he's a very optimistic and happy for him, but his faith isn't a short, autistic guy in Argentina.
I'm going to play a few more reactions here on a few other. This is AM AM wake up. I kind of checked this out. This is Steve Poinkinen. I like him. I've been on a show with him with Zach Brown. He's a funny guy. But he's very, I'd say he's more conspiracy black-pilled. So this is kind of what... see if can I do this one here?
Okay, they are Jews. Argentinian.
Argentinian.
Argentinian. If you ask him at any rate. Javier Milei.
Javier.
Now, Javi was invited to the World Economic Forum. Brand new president of Argentina, making some bold decisions in the country. And so this is him in his words about why he's going to the World Economic Forum. We'll play that, show you why the libertarian bros get their little beeholes wet when they look at him. Of course, anybody with that haircut, it comes directly from the set of Lord of the Rings.
These guys is Mount Rushmore right now. Is this guy Vivek? And who, right? Isn't it? It's same people all over. This guy are the same people on the...
Oh, yeah. Vivek, absolutely. Train. And then it's like Thomas Massey and Ron Paul.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know. Anyway, we'll play this and we'll take a look at what David Icke had to say. We'll listen to some of his speech at the WEF.
What is the purpose of the trip to Davos? Plant
the ideas of freedom in a forum that is contaminated with the 2030 socialist agenda. The only thing it will bring is misery. I mean, he's not wrong, but it's great talking about it. So, freedom is the key to prosperity. Freedom meaning I will let my friends from Wall Street come in and pillage my country, exploit everyone who's in it, as long as me and my buddies in the death squads are kept in the Armani suits.
Okay, and he goes on there, and there's a thing by Dave Ickes which talks about, I had it up here. And anyway, I think what's wrong in thinking about that, and we talked about Malay when I had Chris Baker, I think it was on the show, which is, this is a, you don't get all worked up about the country being turned over to corporatists when it's literally been under the thumb of socialists for way too long. It's a piece of shit country right now. And this guy comes in and he's actually privatizing a lot of things. And there's a difference between fascistically privatizing it, which is you having the government control a lot of these private businesses, which is kind of what it's been, to the government's not allowed to even be in there. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. I'm fascinated by this. I love Steve, by the way, and he's a good guy and funny. I just think there's sometimes you get so, and this is kind of the conspiracy top lobster point of view, which is you're so against whatever's happening that when something goes your way, or maybe a conspiracy is going your way, you suddenly have to turn it around to always being against it. You don't always have to. Sometimes you just take the win. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, no. I think, hang on, motherfucker. I'm on a delay here. No, I think Malay's okay. Like you were saying, they've been run by collectivists this whole damn time. So, you know, why not give the Wall Street Benet these guys a chance to run the place? I mean, it can't go any worse than here, right?
Right.
But so, seriously, I'm not spurging out against them. I think it's fine. Like, they needed something like that.
I'm not where Clint is either, because I like to be kind of reserved in a little sense of like, let's see what happens.
Well, I'm also not Argentinian.
Right. That is by the way, that's the point I made over and over, which is, it's not my country. Why, this thing's a piece of shit. Let's see what happens. Why not? Let's give it a shot. I'm excited about it. And I was excited to see him go down there. And then anyway, some of this is the Michael Knowles and those kinds. You watch them online where they, Daniel McAdams shitting on him. Now you kind of have to back some things off. But of course I'm always like, yeah, but you were saying RFK Jr. for president. Toad, you know, he's another one, but he'll just dog style, anything that, McAdams says. So you have that. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting speech. It wasn't over the top. I think for where he was at, it was brutal. And I think that's something that we need to acknowledge and push.
I liked it. It wasn't the bombastic approach. And I think that's good, because
it's the
reserve, matter of fact, read it all out approach. I mean, people like the crazy, like goofy, you know, way that he presents it, or as Knowles calls it, the Trumpian way, whatever. But he didn't have to do that, especially at the WEF. He just laid all out there. The facts speak for themselves, and he backed them up pretty well in that speech.
Right. So this is what I'm drinking tonight. Drake's West Coast IPA. This is Best Coast Indian Pale Ale. What you got anything going? Oh, you're at work, but you work in a distribution.
I'm at work. I am at work, but this is a Liquid Death tea lemonade Arnold Palmer. Yeah, it's water. No, we do carry Liquid Death. I mean, you have sparkling water and tea, and that's exactly what's inside this can, man. Nothing else. I actually am I'm cutting beer for a while, so we're going to see how that goes. I'll probably have a few Guinness on my birthday, but that's in a month. So
I'm
trying to maximize the gains and avoid the beer.
Right. I wasn't a big drink. I mean, I would drink it, but it's literally like a can here and there. I've cut out as well. I'm not doing very much during the week. You do a show, I got to drink something. But it's what it is. I want to say one thing. We were kind of talking about this. You asked me about the Daily Wire, the Blaze, about being libertarian stuff. And I've been thinking about this more and more. And I know there's a lot, like I did the thing on the ADL, and you trash the Jews, you being me, trash the Jews. A lot of this, and even the Daily Wire, there was someone that, put in the thing as like, what's the problem with them? Here's what my problem is with the conservatives and the witches. They've always preached about not being victims. And what they now do are they become horrible victims. Or they tell you about it's an event that's happening. It's so traumatic. There's a woke person at this university, Harvard, that your kids will never go to. We've got to be so concerned about it. Now buy my chocolate bar that's going to save the day. And so they make, and that's the same thing about the libertarians or the problem with the GOP. You don't take accountability for your own piece of shit that you've done. And now you're creating victims just like the left is doing. And that's why I hate them. And that's why I hate the left. That's why I hate the right in this sense. And even though I'm more right than anything, I hate this little segment that just jumps all over. Anyway, it's same with the Jew issue with the ADL.
They spell out S-H-I-T.
S-H-I-T. Yeah, just say it. Just say it. What are we, 2-year-olds? Yeah, that's the thing. They treat you like 2-year-olds. You can't be an adult. Say it. I curse around my kids. Do you curse around yours? I don't know.
Same. Yeah. Oh yeah, dude.
All right. Look, this is what's coming up here on February 2nd. I'm doing another Kill Pod. By the way, in the books, I reached out to P Nord and I said, P Nord, we're doing a Kill Pod. And he starts to message me about his life. Holy shit. Okay. He's got some stories. He will not be able to do it in a minute, but our friend Zach Brown is going to come on and he's going to be the special guest. So Andy said he can make it this time. I know Dickie's already on the line. Layton is. We're going to try to have more people sign up, people. And maybe I'll just post the link out there on Twitter. And you just come in as we are. And we're going to keep you coming through. And we're going to have prizes this time. So what do you say? Hey, Tyler, what kind of prizes are we talking about? We're talking about Fox and Sons coffee. That's, of course, what we're going to do. You're going to get some coffee prizes. We're going to be able to send you out some maybe a Bean of the Month Club or something like that. Flick the Bean of the Month. I don't know. Currently, I've been drinking this Brazil Honey Prep. I love all these coffees. And by the way, if you go back and check the show with Steve, we talked about coffee over and over. I know you're not actually taking coffee on, Dickie, but there you go. Anything you want to say about Kill Pod or coffee?
I want to address JC in the comments here. The people at the pub won't think I died. I never said I was going to stop drinking. I just said beer for a bit. So okay. Not to worry. I never Tucker, said anything about mojitos or margaritas or whiskey or anything like that.
JC says Tucker definitely talks to his audience like he thinks they're retards.
They are.
they are, right. Good point. I come and go with that. I mean, Tucker, I didn't like the part, he's talking about it blows me away because this is where I think it's important to stay in your lane. I don't know a lot. I'm not the best on economics. I, refer that out. I'm pretty good on legal stuff, but even then I'm only good on what I know. I'm very good on family law. I've taken a narrow snippet into some specific points of the Constitution, which I'm really into. But other than that, you know, I mean, you know, maybe you or Andy knows more than me. So Tucker has a huge audience. And I think the problem people will get is that they think, oh, Tucker, he's really been good on this. Well, it doesn't mean he's good on everything. So anyway, what's coming up with you? You got any shows going? How do you feel about the fact that you're no longer the Tower Game producer and that I am?
I'm happy about it. I mean, I don't even watch the show anymore, so like, I'm glad somebody gets doing it.
By the way, I had stopped watching myself until I decided to do this producer thing, and now I've actually been enjoying it. Although sometimes I'm like, I don't catch everything because I'm so busy like trying to find clips and do whatever that I don't really have that time. So,
now the show's great. They've gotten, you know, a lot better and they're funny. I just like they don't. I mean, they needed to grow and be more professional and more streamlined and shit. I mean, I'm not watching as much, somebody who gets the show more needs to do it. And, you know, Laney does some splits, and he's a lot better at it than I am. Like, he does a great job. Layton does them, too. He does a really good job. So, like, yeah, dude, I'd rather them do a good job and get their name out there than me be involved with it. You know what I'm saying?
I was making a joke. But even that was the thing, you know, Top Lobster put out a thing, hey, you know, looking for a producer. And I thought about it, and I sent him a message. And I'm like, here, look, what you need is you need a producer that's not interested in being on the show. You need a producer that's actually interested in helping and like, put, and I'm not saying you. You are original type of thing. But you need someone who, and I had watched Top Lobster, like, work the show, and he's doing, you know, comments, he's doing this, and things are going by, and I'm like, you've got to be able to be engaged and not worry about that, you know, send it off to Jamie, do whatever.
From what I've seen, it frees him up, and it's, you know, because Top being on the show more so in the last year and a half, 2 years, like, it's been good, and when he can work outside of the production and just say his shit, because he's been podcasting for a little while now, you know, he does a lot better, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying to take some of that. So Toad can actually just spend time betting and maybe his overall demise.
So Toad can bet and think of his jokes and things like that, and then rage quit. You know, I don't know what he does these days. Right. I haven't seen it. But I do have something fun coming up. I got a nice long road trip with our friend across the pond, Aaron. So he will be here on my birthday. So for those of you who don't know, he's a good friend of ours in the Tower Gang community. He is my essentially British cousin. We are soccer buddies. We are beer drinking buddies. And his first interaction in America will be the first night of Mardi Gras on the 13th of February. So he'll be landing in New Orleans. We're going to go party around for a bit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So soon as he's off the plane, he gets to see me and some Mardi Gras titties. So I know some good spots there that aren't too crazy touristy. I don't know how accessible it will be during Mardi Gras week. We'll have to see. I mean, last time I went to Mardi Gras, some of the spots were okay.
All right, so you might have to report back to us.
We'll be shooting some guns, and we'll be going to Daytona 500 together. So I would try to document as much as I can from that. Maybe release a little fun video for it. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, I got to take off here because I'm going to my therapy, not mental therapy, but physical therapy. Not physical therapy. It's a different kind. Anyway, Dickie, appreciate you pushing your way onto the show again and watching this with me. I do. You did stellar, actually, today. So everybody, make comments, share the show out there, subscribe, you know, retweet it on Twitter, whatever.
One more thing. When I get done with school, I'll be your therapist. How's that?
Okay. Yeah. The person I go to, she does amazing work. So I'm actually been feeling good. I'm back on the bike. I'm back in the gym. So I appreciate talking to you. Maybe we'll do a beer episode again. I don't know.
A beer in a therapy session.
Yeah. All right, guys. Take care. We'll see you next week. I don't know what we're having going on, but Tom Woods has been in my DM saying, yeah, I'll come on the show, trying to other people. I don't know. But let's make Friday nights fun. All right. Out.
Okay, I'm leaving now, bye guys.
But she's back.
And now.
Chick-fil-A is completely overrated. It's not that good. I prefer Zaxby's. I prefer Popeyes.
Takes a tough man to make a tender forecast, Nick.
I guess that's me.
Keep fucking that chicken.
Should I vote for Dick Cheney on the Libertarian Party? Do I have an obligation to vote for Dick Cheney?
I would say so.
Yes.
Well, did it work for those people?
No, it never does. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but... But it might work for us.
that one dude was like, not a podcast, so I can't find it anywhere, and they don't have video.
Oh, yeah, Peter Janky, yeah.
Yeah, I blocked him.
I'll do it. If he unblocks me, I'll...
He'll buy your shirt if you unblock him, Bert.
He's a wigger.
Yeah, nothing cooler than so a 49-year-old wigger. Like,
yeah, I just started live streaming. Cut me some slack. I'm pretty high-tech for a boomer. But anyways...
Boomer.